Back to the Garage Series Under the Hood. My name is Jeremy Chapman. We're coming to you live from Austin, Texas at the MEC Conference. I'm joined today by Greg Baribault, the grandfather of Exchange Active Sync.
Ouch, grandfather?
Crazy uncle, I can see, but not grandfather.
The crazy uncle of Exchange Active Sync. You've been around since the AirSync days, right?
That's right, yep, back in 2000.
So this is where we really go under the hood with the people that built the code, that wrote all of it, that's been around for many, many years in terms of, especially in our case, with Active Sync and AirSync. We've had some great announcements this week around OWA and OWA for devices, right?
Yeah, we did. We announced the OWA for Android app will be coming out very soon. It kind of completes the portfolio that we launched the iOS versions for iPad and iPhone back last July. So we're really excited to bring it to the Android platform as well.
And I think from an Exchange Active Sync perspective, it's really kind of the underpinnings of a lot of the management tools that we're seeing across all the platforms, things like device management, MDM, that we're seeing around all the different vendors of smartphones and also MDM suites. So we're going to talk about all of that in the next few minutes. But let's have a look at this in terms of kind of the timeline, what we've been doing over the years through Exchange Active Sync.
Yeah, sure.
Because I know that it's been evolving. When did it start? When was AirSync actually developed?
So AirSync was back in 2000, actually. Let me give you a quick timeline where we were and where we've gone. So back in Exchange 2000, we had another product. It was a bolt-on, not really included with Exchange, called the Microsoft Mobile Information Server. It was MIS. And that introduced this protocol that we called AirSync at the time. And AirSync was really, really basic, right? Synced email, your people, and calendar. A three-day calendar there.
Yes.
And that bolted onto Exchange. It's a great product. It actually was the beginning of getting mobile devices that had data connectivity to reach into Exchange and sync content. But this was the device had to really reach in. The user had to initiate the sync and download when they were ready to get mailed. There was really no way to indicate.
So there wasn't a background sync going on. There wasn't push notification. All that stuff was predating this technology, right?
Exactly, right. So shortly after, we started including this in Exchange Server. And there were a couple of really key releases for us. One was in 2005. That was the 2003 SP1 release, SP1 of Exchange. And in SP1, we added two pretty important features. One was policy. And policy allowed enterprises, really for the first time, to support a bring-your-own-device policy for the company. So people could buy a device, bring it in. Back in the 2000 days, you know, and even a little bit moving into 2003, devices were procured by the company. You know, they were purchased, brought in, provisioned, set up, and given to an employee. By adding policy, we really allowed companies for the first time to set a policy for devices that were brought in by the employee. And they could require things here like a PIN lock, and that in, you know, the device was encrypted, and they could remote wipe. Right? Remote wipe was a really key catalyst.
That was huge. So you wouldn't have the exposure in terms of having a device that it doesn't have too much data on it because you're only you're only caching a certain number of days of mail on it. B, instead of having IT provision the device, put a password or a PIN on it, this is stuff that you could do centrally right from your Exchange Server and mandate that through policy right as you're managing that mobile device.
That's exactly right.
So what happened after that?
So policy is here. In the 2007 release of Exchange, again, SP1, we added a few really important features. One was search. So like you just mentioned, devices really only stored a few days worth of mail.
Right.
And if you ever wanted to find anything, you know, from a week ago, 2 weeks ago, or older, there was really no good way to do that while mobile. Search gave the user the ability to reach in, do a server search, and get the results back. It also added, I'll get into acronym mode here, what we call always up to date. And always up to date meant that the device connected to the server, maintained a connection, and new content that came in, the device would get right away, and they could actually inform the user. So it was with always up to date that your phone started beeping. Many of you are probably cursing this now, but you would get the alert that you have new mail all the time. and you'd be able to check it out.
And I would say this is probably the inflection point of smart devices, because this is 2007. This is when they start to explode. So you've got more and more vendors, more platforms, everything wanting to use the Exchange Active Sync protocol. And that's about when we opened it up externally to other operating systems too, right?
That's right. Yeah, it was Windows Mobile really predominantly through here. But 2007 and beyond, we saw a lot of third-party support for EAS.
Okay, so then that led to some more technology, things like Allow Block Quarantine, right?
Yes, so that was in 2010. So with the 2010 release, again, SP1 actually, we introduced
Allow Block Quarantine. So one of the trends I'm seeing for better mobile device support, wait for SP1 to deploy.
At least with ActiveSync. We hope to change that now with with our new apps. But Allow Block Quarantine really was a way to address, Perry mentioned in the keynote, entropy as a key problem in computing. And we saw a lot of entropy in the device ecosystem. So we were seeing a spec that we would publish for how ActiveSync gets implemented. And as more and more third parties would pick that up in their devices, we saw many, many more variations in the way that they would implement. And it would mean features that were left out. It would mean, in some cases, devices would misrepresent what they were capable of doing. We saw devices that claimed they were device encrypted, and in reality, they weren't encrypting. So we call those misbehaving devices. We needed administrators to be able to start controlling which devices were going to be allowed to connect and which ones were not. And the output of that, we ended up creating large tables on places like TechNet that would give you a list of all devices that we were aware of or platforms and which features were supported and not. It was kind of a messy situation.
And then fast forward into basically last year, where we started creating our own mail clients. So what's the backstory around creating OWA for devices?
Yeah, so part of it was to get our hands around this entropy, right? We really wanted IT administrators to understand that if somebody is connecting with a device, they know exactly how that app is behaving. And so now we own the app. And so it's a Microsoft channel from end to end. We can promise exactly what that app is doing and how it's connecting back, and still apply all of the policies, at least the policies that were most used, into that app. So with the very same UI, very same commandlets, we can set remote wipe. We can set PIN policies or encryption policies. And it applies to both your ActiveSync devices that are connecting, as well as all of the OWA for devices apps that are connecting.
And I think some of the key points around, especially this time frame here, as we're moving in through always up-to-date search and all those features into Allow Block Quarantine, we were beholden to the way that people were implementing the features of Exchange ActiveSync on those devices. So they might not do everything that they would do, for example, as we're doing in OWA today, in OWA for devices. So you wouldn't have full fidelity in terms of that spec that you talked about earlier, where they can basically select which options they want to implement, and so maybe some manufacturers would augment, what was native inside of Android, or some people might extend what was in iOS. But you're basically, it's up to the vendor of that phone or the OEM of that phone to dictate what goes in the mail experience.
Yep, exactly. A great example is IRM. Our customers tell us how important IRM is, and really today Windows Phone is the only platform that's capable of sending and receiving, participating with IRM.
Right, so because we had IRM and things like OWA, and we had the ability to control that experience, it kind of all led to us building OWA, right?
Yeah, exactly. So partially for us, kind of an efficiency point of view, we had a great asset that was OWA. We were able to reuse a lot of that code and create touch versions of OWA that applied to both the phone and the tablet. And although you really don't want your experience on a mobile device to be limited to a browser, because when you shut off the browser, put the phone in your pocket, it's not going to respond. You're not going to see notifications of mail. You're not going to get meeting reminders. So we added a layer under that browser that is a native app, and it ships through the app stores. And that native app is able to integrate very deeply with the platform and really bring the OWA experience and the UI that people have come to love in OWA and deliver it through a device, but also deeply integrate it with the platform. Do things like storage and camera access, GPS access.
So the great thing is these devices get better. Our HTML5 gets supported in their browsers. I think it's part of the Android announcement we made in terms of having an HTML5 supporting browser there. But basically, we can hook into their notification mechanisms. You can make it live and breathe and feel like a normal app. It's really a hybrid app because it's consuming HTML underneath that application wrapper.
That's right.
And that's kind of where we are today. So why don't we have a look at, because we talked about OWA for Android this week. We've also talked about how you can consume all the features within OWA. So I think you've got a good demo set up in terms of showing all that. So let's take a look.
Let's take a look.
What is clutter? I always like those.
What is clutter? So this is a great example here. So I'm looking at, this is an Android phone with our app running. And what you're seeing is a new clutter experience that we saw demoed both at the keynote and in a couple of sessions today. This app is the very same app that would be in the App Store for everyone. And what I'm seeing is an experience that isn't actually shipped. It's part of the service that I run against. But actually makes a great point about the architecture of our app. That native host that we run all of our UI inside of is consistent across all people. But the experience that they see is driven by what server they're connecting to, whatever version of the Exchange server they happen to be connected to, which means that their experience will be exactly the same on an iPad, on an iPhone, on an Android phone, or if they sign into any browser. There's not going to be any difference in feature set, like waiting for an app to get updated. As soon as we release the feature into Office 365, or as soon as we release a CU that has the feature included, people will get it on all devices on that day.
Right, so you can centrally manage the experience of that container, essentially, because it's just showing a web part of a website within the app. So any change that you make centrally manifests itself on all consuming device types. So pretty cool stuff.
So let me just click through a few examples. So clutter, I'll dismiss the introduction, but you can see I've got a bunch of clutter mail in my list view here. I'll show a couple of quick triage actions. So I can multi-select a bunch of email, maybe mark it red or unread. I can move them to folders. I have access to all of my folders on the device. This is a little bit unlike ActiveSync, where they sync only a few folders, the ones that you select.
Right.
We introduced a new model of syncing the folders that you visit the most frequently. We kind of do it automatically for you, match your behavior. If you feel compelled, you can go into options and change the folders. You can also do a lot of other cool features that we wish more ActiveSync clients would do, like setting my OOF. Automatic replies is off. I can turn that on. And now I'm setting OOF, right? Something I think a lot of people would love to see on their mobile devices. So let me jump into calendar. It's one of my favorite areas. So in the calendar, what I have here is my own personal calendar. But what I can do now with the app is I can layer on additional calendars. So here I've got the one that's just called calendar. This is actually an internet subscription, and it is my Mech calendar that came from the IM Mech website. So I've subscribed to that online. It feeds into my OWA experience wherever I go. I've also got some groups in here. So here I've got a Best of Mech Photos group. So I can turn that calendar on as well, and I happen to know that there's a post-Mech photo review. I don't know what's going to get shown there.
Always something good.
I can go into this item. This is on a group calendar now, and maybe I want to attend that. So I can go and add that to my own calendar, and it's going to make a copy on my own personal calendar that stays synchronized with the master. So if anyone that is a member of that group moves the meeting, I'll see the update appear on my own calendar as well. And now that it's on my calendar, it'll also show on my free busy.
Okay.
So if I go and put a Visa card number, and I'm trying to send this to an external recipient.
That is a valid credit card number. I was actually playing with this over the weekend, and you have to have what would equate to a valid credit card number based on the algorithm of how credit card numbers are produced. So you can't just do 1234, 1234. But there we go. We've got a policy tip that's fired up right on your phone.
So even on a mobile device now, we can inform people that they're violating part of their compliance policy.
And they can see what it is. If you do show details, that will probably show that it's a credit card that you're trying to send, get some information, some training about why you shouldn't be sending this. And all of that. So really cool stuff, giving us full fidelity in terms of how we can actually consume mail on OFR devices. Now, there's some other thing about this in terms of how we get push notifications, because if we're in Office 365, we have the ability to see like how many new mails there are that are unread, right?
Right. So when we launched the app back last July, we supported Office 365. We were very clear that the app was designed for Office 365. And part of the reason for that was we feel like push notifications is a really, really critical part of the experience. And we were not able to bring push notifications to the on-premise customers. So as part of the latest cumulative update, CU3 and now SP1, we've delivered on-premise support fully for the OFR devices apps by doing push notifications from the on-premise.
And that routes itself through Office 365 in some way. So I think it makes sense in this case to show architecturally how that works back on the PPI. We also have some guidance in terms of where to get that set up, right?
So there's a link here. It's aka.ms/pushproxy. And that explains how to set up your environment to support push notifications from an on-premises server. But essentially, if you picture what an Office 365 server would do, in 365, we're able to connect through the various push notification services, whether that's Apple's push notification network or Google's. And that is how we actually connect out to the device, right? So our mobile phone running OAuth for devices. And the first time the app runs, it's going to connect back to Office 365 and tell it who it is and register itself. And then we know how to connect through and pass these notifications.
So if I'm using it on-prem, then what happens?
Yeah, so for on-premise, the relationship between Office 365 and that push notification service is a tricky one. We have to have a certificate that's issued by the OEM. And we felt that having every on-premises customer have to have a relationship with Apple or Google to get these certificates, and also effectively recompile the application to receive push notifications from that certificate was just too much to try to ask. It was too complex. So instead, we've created a proxy, and it lets the on-prem server push the notification through Office 365, and we handle routing that out to the appropriate device.
So hold on, what exactly are you pushing from on-prem into Office 365? Because I know you probably don't want to be pushing mail or contents or a contacts or any of that, right?
Sure. So we don't want to push anything sensitive over that network. It's a secure network, but we still want to be extra cautious about what's sent. So all we're sending through that channel is the number of unseen messages since you've last synced. There's a number included in that. And it tells the device simply, you should go sync. There's stuff waiting for you. And it comes back and it does the sync directly to the on-premise server again. So at no time is any sensitive or personal information passed over that network through the device push notification.
So just
service.
The number and basically the device ID, and that's all it really is needed
that's
in that case
need.
To talk to that device and grab mail from the on-prem services.
That's right.
So I think in terms of the in terms of OAuth, especially in the administration experiences, I showed a demo in season 2 of the Garage series, and I wanted to show kind of one of the other advantages of OAuth for devices in the sense that if you wipe that device, you're only wiping the mail container on the device and not the whole device itself. So I'm going to do a little flashback to my demo that I showed back in series 2, about in the October-November timeframe when we showed all of this. So if you'll go back to my PC here. There we are. So again, this is something that I showed before. I had an Android phone, HTC One. It had all of my pictures on it, all my kids' photos growing up. Everything was there, of course. I leave the company, and what happens? The admin comes into the admin portal, decides that in this case he wants to wipe my HTC One device running Android. In this case, it was a 4.2 Android device. When I issue that device wipe, what will happen? If I go back to my phone and try to sync mail one last time, what ends up happening is now a factory reset ensues. I don't know if you've played with all this stuff in real time at your own site. One tip, if you're actually playing with this for demo purposes, you have to reset that device wipe because it will keep wiping it every single time you reattach to the Exchange service. So you have to unissue that device wipe in that sense. Now it's wiping my device. Now everything that was on that device, if I wasn't syncing that back up to the cloud, everything's gone. All of my history with my kids' photos, everything on that device is completely annihilated. Now think about it in a bring your own device world where you've got something like an iPad, again, where you've got your photos, you've got maybe some apps that you've paid for, all these things on there, and you want to have selective wipe capabilities to just wipe off the information that you as the Exchange admin has put on the device. Because in some countries, you might not even be allowed to wipe that personally owned device of a user using a remote device wipe unless you've signed up a contract with them. So here I'm in OAuth, I've got everything set up on my iPad in this case. Had everything there, my email, everything in my calendar, things that I would want to make sure that a way to wipe off of that machine. And here I'm going to issue the same type of device wipe. And here you can see it's called OAuth for Devices right there in the Exchange Management Console and the mobile device details. I'm going to issue the same wipe on this iPad. And the nice thing is because everything is encapsulated in that one app, all that's going to happen is once I go back into my iPad, open up OAuth, you're going to see some messaging here in the bottom of the page, closing, please wait. And now it's basically just resetting the app itself. All of my stuff, all of my photos, everything else is there. And it's basically resetting the Outlook app only to an out-of-box experience, an Ubi experience, so I can go back in. And if I log into another service, maybe my next employer is running Office 365 or has Oa working on-prem with Greg just showed, I can do that and sign in with another service. So I have the ability to continue using it. But in this case, I didn't have to wipe every piece of data on that machine. So pretty powerful in terms of being able to manage users in a BYOD environment and not have to completely obliterate everything on that phone and maybe set it back multiple versions of Android in some cases in order to get it back to that factory state. So we've covered a lot of ground here in terms of what we can do as part of the experience within OWA and how Exchange Active Sync has evolved. Thank you for all the insights in terms of how it's developed over the years. And I think this is pretty exciting stuff for most people in terms of running the service and in terms of being able to have a couple of great options and always up-to-date option on the OWA side with notifications built into the phone, Android support coming, iOS support already there on iPhone and on iPad, and really a lot of great mail experiences that I think, and on-prem, that not everybody is aware of or using that you can really help users discover and use against your Exchange environment. So with that, I want to thank everybody for joining us tonight for this session. We're going to have another session in a few minutes, but thank you everybody for watching. Goodbye for now. After this, we're going to talk about data loss prevention, some of the security enhancements with Asaf Kashi. So stay seated, everybody, and we'll see you next time.